Join us today as we gather in a wider search for truth and purpose. In this quest, may we greet one another with open hearts and minds. May we inspire each other to consider new questions and seek deeper meaning. May we cultivate wisdom and compassion. Let all who enter this sanctuary see a welcome face, hear a kind word, and find comfort in this community. And may all that is done and said here today be in service to law and justice. And now, we have to disagree. Two other readings. It's by William Ellery Channing. I call that mind free, which jealously guards its intellectual rights and powers, which calls no one master, which does not content itself with passive or hereditary faith, which opens itself to light whensoever it may come, which receives new truth as an angel from heaven. Second reading from Michael Schuller. Cherish your doubts, for doubt is a servant of truth. Question your convictions, for beliefs too tightly held strangle the mind and its natural wisdom. Suspect all certitudes, for the world whirls on, nothing abides. Yet in our inner rooms full of doubt, inquiry, and suspicion, let a corner be reserved for trust. For without trust, there is no space for communities to gather or for friendships to be forged. Indeed, this is a small corner where we connect and reconnect with each other. Would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? When I first heard this question as a teenager, I remember thinking, duh, of course it's more important to be right. Yeah, I may have missed the point somewhat. In my youth, I was not only an earnest seeker of truths, I was sure it was possible to figure out the truth. If only I could figure out the right sources and apply correct reason to understanding them. My religious upbringing did not encourage questioning, and often did not offer very satisfying answers. But I thought I would find them on my own anyway. In retrospect, it's really not so surprising that I was drawn to Unitarian Universalism. Despite my lofty ideals, I realized long ago that no one has the knowledge to reason through every question in the quest for truth. I've also noticed that reason sometimes seems to get a little misused from time to time. It's hard to be objective sometimes. But like most of you use, I consider the use of reason an important source in our faith tradition. So imagine my chagrin when I learned of a study explaining that the search for truth likely isn't what our reasoning abilities are about at all. I happened upon an article a few years ago titled, Five Logical Fallacies That Make You Wrong More Than You Think. Among other things, this introduced me to the argumentative theory of reasoning. According to this theory, reason didn't evolve as a tool for seeking truth, but for winning arguments. Researchers Hugo Mercier and Dan Sperber concluded that reasoning doesn't primarily function to help us improve our knowledge or make better decisions. Instead, it evolved as a way to evaluate arguments. This includes reaching conclusions that will be easier to defend later. They contend this theory explains a wide range of evidence in the psychology of reasoning, including confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is the human tendency to seek what supports our beliefs and ignore the information that challenges those beliefs.
Apparently, facts don't really change our minds. And this, they say, isn't a flaw in the system, but works well in serving the function of creating good arguments. Mercier describes reason as a purely social phenomenon, evolved to help us convince others and to be careful when others try to convince us. Truth and accuracy were beside the point. Now, if you think about that, in terms of, say, someone whose political or religious beliefs you may find off-putting, it may be easy to say, oh yeah, that makes sense. I can see they're not using reason to get to the truth. No wonder they're so impervious to logic. But it may be a little harder to accept that you and I do this too. As writers Benjamin and Smallwood put it, if you're a human being, you're from a long line of people who got to the winner's circle again and again by ignoring facts in favor of advancing your side. And once we start defending our side, it can become very hard to second guess ourselves. Confirmation bias is stronger in more emotionally charged issues or deeply held beliefs, but we can become identified with our ideas very quickly. I realized this one snowy day when I didn't go to work because of the snow and found myself in some unexpected free time. Free time that I mostly spent in front of my computer talking with old friends online. I had some odd notion that I could engage friends with what friends were posting about and have an interesting, innocuous conversation. That didn't go so well. A friend had posted an article about expanding the Family Leave Act to cover grieving parents who lost a child. I thought, that sounds nice, but I'm not sure it fits the purpose of that particular law. Now, having said that, I somehow soon found myself in an argument, one that drew in a couple of other friends, and I soon found myself defending myself against accusations that I was lacking compassion. And I found myself expanding on how such a law would be foolish for various, very rational reasons that were becoming clearer and clearer the more I thought about this. I also found myself questioning the integrity of my friend who posted this in the first place. As a self-identified conservative, why was she wanting to expand government regulations anyway? This was really not a good use of my day off. But imagine if I or any of my friends involved even had kids, or a history of supporting this idea or the other side for longer than a few hours, or had any actual stake whatsoever in the issue at hand, beyond wanting, or perhaps needing, to triumph in the face of an idea we had being questioned and feeling attacked. As I said, our UU faith tradition places a high value on reason. In a 2005 study entitled Engaging Our Theological Diversity, done by the Unitarian Universalist Association's Commission on Appraisal, 90% of respondents rated as important or very important the statement, "We are committed to the use of reason to interpret our experience and to form and test our religious convictions." I also agree that this statement is important. Our Unitarian forebearers struggled for a faith that would allow them to honor the dictates of reason, to freely inquire without the restraints of doctrine, and to affirm the right to make private judgments in religious matters. This freedom to search for truth with reason is a key piece of our UU faith today. Even if individual reason evolved as a way to argue that we are right about whatever we happen to believe anyway. In reflecting on the ups and downs of human reason, I've been starting to think that maybe it functions less like the map to truth that I had once hoped for, and more like a GPS system. Once we program it in a destination, we can usually find a way there. Perhaps if we recognize that it comes with a preset destination of being right no matter what, Yeah, we've all tried to get there. We can notice when this kicks in a little bit better. Even if reason is a tool that evolved for one purpose, arguing, it is still usefully adapted for other things. I found that when I can reprogram that GPS for understanding someone better or being more loving, I can arrive there too. Awareness helps. This matters a great deal in creating a welcoming community. The Commission on Appraisal study had this to say about those who didn't consider reason important. Quote, some agree with Minister Richard Earhart that when I was growing up, I learned that it was all right to say just about anything that was on my mind in my UU congregation, but that right ended if I mentioned the word God. It is a fact of UU history that while some have come to us because their authentic selves were wounded in Orthodox Christian or other communities, there are also UUs who have had their most precious life-transforming experiences dismissed by fellow UUs in the name of reason. End quote. Ironically, the friend who I found myself so intent on winning against in an inconsequential matter once also engaged me in a conversation about a far more personal area of disagreement. And I felt I handled that one so much better. After college, her religious views became more conservative, and she once expressed her concern that my soul was in danger because of my gay lifestyle. Now, having wrestled with God and with my own faith a good deal before coming out, I actually could have been very well prepared to jump into an argument here. But what would that really have achieved? Although it's easy to read bad intent into such statements, I believe she was actually sincerely concerned for my soul. Her intent wasn't bad, and I wasn't going to change her mind. I didn't want to argue or end the friendship over this. So I listened a bit. I explained my own perspective and didn't compromise there. But we were able to agree to disagree. I didn't spend my whole day arguing. That was good. I somehow got my reasoning GPS to be set for understanding instead of proving I'm right. In doing so, I avoided an argument I didn't want and refrained from causing my friend to dig in and defend her position even more. We talked about the free and responsible search for meaning and truth and for a quest for truth. To me, both these phrases, searching and questing, suggest movement. Most people don't move much when they feel they or their ideas are being attacked. Instead, we dig in and we defend ourselves right where we are. I think that's important to recognize if we take seriously our third UU principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. If our reasoning is set to argue why we're right and others are wrong, this would be hard to accomplish in a congregation where individuals can and do hold rationally irreconcilable beliefs. So how do we accept and support each other across theological differences? How do we make space for each of us to engage in our own quest for truth and share what we hold true? Now, last time I spoke, I suggested that maybe instead of asking ourselves during coffee hour what we do for a living, we could ask each other, so tell me about your theology. Now, one of you actually listened and asked me just that. And I laughed, and I drank my tea, and I realized that I feel really, really uncomfortable with the idea of talking about my own theological beliefs. Now, this is apparently fairly common in universalism. Let me read you a fairly long quote from the 2005 Commission on Appraisal report on engaging our theological diversity. Become clear in the course of our conversations with UUs concerning the issue of theology. With rare exceptions, conversations about beliefs and theology are not regular features of our congregational life. Repeatedly, people have told us, we don't talk about those sorts of things at my church. Everything we we have observed suggests that we commissioners are breaking a taboo that Unitarian Universalism took on subconsciously at Consolidation, the taboo against talking through the need to merge theologies. This taboo seems to have been based on a fear that if we start to talk about our beliefs, we may discover we are totally incompatible with one another, and our congregations will fall apart. At a minimum, there is a rarely articulated fear of giving offense. What Rebecca Parker of the Star King School for the Ministry referred to in our meeting with her as a culture of niceness. We give lip service to the way in which theological diversity enriches our congregation, and there is no question that it could. However, all the evidence suggests that, in fact, growing theological diversity within UU culture, where tolerance and acceptance are considered paramount values, more commonly makes individuals so afraid of offending one another that conversation about belief and theology is stifled. Encouragement to spiritual growth is a stated goal of congregational life in the UUA's principles, and the rich theological milieu we at present in most of our congregations would seem to be fertile soil for such growth. But if people are afraid to talk about and experience the diversity before them, then the potential for growth will be stunted. Now, I for one don't want to see our potential for growth stunted. So how do we overcome this avoidance of talking about our beliefs? I don't have a definitive answer, but I think it helps when we remember we don't always have to be right. We don't always have to be looking for one all-encompassing truth either. We each carry the truth of what our experiences have been like. We can make space to share those stories and the conclusions we've reached from them. I attended the General Assembly last June, and among the most memorable experiences was an impromptu chance to do just that. Saturday evening, I arranged to meet a new friend I made for dinner. We'd met at another workshop, and I briefly chatted, but it really bonded when we ran into each other at the UU Christian Fellowship's communion service. This, by the way, is the only communion service I've ever attended with the gluten-free wafer option. Yeah, very UU. But I was surprised to find how emotional the service was for me to attend. There was a ritual I'd always found very powerful and meaningful, a ritual that for me had embodied a sense of connection, and I hadn't realized how much I'd missed that. There were several others choked up or crying because of the experience as well. And in true UU fashion, there wasn't any particular interpretation or meaning we were expected to accept for this ritual. This was a very freeing and healing experience for me. Now, over dinner that night, my friend and I were joined by two other GA delegates who were there. As we shared this mealtime, we also went around and shared stories of our faith journeys that had brought us to Unitarian Universalism. My new friend, Tiffany, who called herself a Christian pagan, had completed seminary in another denomination before realizing it no longer felt right to her. She declined to go through with ordination. The other two who joined us were Randy and Joy, a couple who'd recognized in college that they were atheists, but continued doing the music ministry they loved in their former denomination. Eventually, it felt too much of a stretch for their integrity and they left. When we spoke, Randy was pursuing ministry in Texas in the hopes of ministering to atheists. Probably having an opportunity to reclaim a part of myself I didn't know I'd been missing helped me to be more willing to talk about myself than I usually am, and also made me more receptive to hearing and deeply listening to the stories of others with such different yet similar experiences. And I needed to hear that. It's actually been a rare experience for me to have that kind of sharing with self-identified atheists. I didn't really learn new information. I've read Richard Dawkins and I've listened to perspectives from other friends, but here it felt different. It felt like a new possibility opened up. This was a chance to hear someone's experience in the context of mutual respect from someone who wasn't trying to change my mind or tell me I'm delusional or dismiss the significance of my experiences that led me to my own theistic beliefs. There was space and safety here. There was room for everyone at the table to be heard and accepted and valued. And this was what I needed. This is what is possible in our UU faith tradition. There are many people I care about who have reached different conclusions about life's big questions than I have. I would love to hear their stories, your stories. If our Unitarian ancestors are best known as champions of reason, our Universalist side of the family is best known for love. Their symbol was a circle with an off-center cross in one corner. They held on to the symbol of their own faith tradition, but purposely left room for other paths and other interpretations of the infinite within their circle. I believe this is symbolic of a kind of loving acceptance that can guide us to truly embrace our principle of acceptance from one another and encouragement of spiritual growth within our congregations. And I'd love to hear during response time about times when we've done well at fostering this kind of sharing. Have you found this when you've had adult RE programs or other discussion groups? Roundtable groups are starting again. If facilitated well, they can be very respectful, great places for this kind of sharing too. May we make the time and the space to hear each other's stories and each other's deeply held beliefs. And when we do that, may we also have the courage to bring our full selves into the circle of community. So be it. Thank you.